when you look at Illinois, it's similar to what you're seeing in other states across the country in that Democrats are dominating in urban areas, Republicans in rural areas.
Yeah, that is very much the case everywhere. Democrats are running up big numbers in the big cities and some of the closer in, more populous suburbs and also college towns, and they're almost completely shut out of the rural areas and small towns. So most states are under one-party control now, certainly at the legislative level. There's only one state, Minnesota, that has a divided legislature in the whole country, which is very unusual. I think it dates back to World War I, was the last time that happened. And I think it's 37 states have the same party controlling the governor and the legislature. And basically it comes down to whether you have a huge city like Chicago that can outvote the rest of the state, or, you know, next door in Indiana, the Democrats also dominate Indianapolis, but that's just not enough to outvote the rest of that state. So the Republicans control everything there.
You write that most every area of the country really has become a bit of a stranglehold because of that dominance in the urban areas for Democrats and more of the rural areas for Republicans. There's not much middle ground left, is there?
Well, that's right. And that was one of the striking things about this last election, was that there was very little change, really. Democrats picked up a few chambers, but it was less than normal in terms of how many chambers or seats around the country that the president's party normally would lose. You know, on average, the president's party always loses seats in legislatures, and it was less than normal this time. And there were a lot of states where no seat changed hands, or one or two. There really wasn't much change. The only thing that changed in most places was that Democrats made gains in upscale suburbs that have been trending their way. And now with President Trump, some voters who have been voting Republican are switching to the Democratic side. But in general, there is this big split. People are divided by geography, as we've said, urban versus rural, but also by education levels, by race, by whether they attend church regularly, all kinds of things. And so people are really not considering voting for the other party. So a lot of areas are locked in place, and it's up and down the ballot. You know, the U.S. Senate has a record low number of senators who are from states that their party didn't win in the last presidential race. There are a record low number of, I think it's only 11 states have divided Senate delegations now, which is the least ever. So we're seeing that people will only vote Democratic or will only vote Republican. And then, like I said, just the mix of how many of those people are in which place determines who's in control overall.
When I look at a state like Illinois, though, I have seen some exceptions to that, in the sense that, of course, we just had a Republican governor. He was voted out of office in what many people view as a very blue or Democratic state. We had a Republican Senator Mark Kirk just a few years ago. So we can see some anomalies in this, correct? Or is there a reason why those folks are able to break through?
Yeah, you can always find anomalies, and certainly among governors, it's still the case. There's a Democratic governor now in Kansas and one in Louisiana, and there's Republican governors of Maryland and Massachusetts, which are otherwise highly Democratic states. But, you know, when I've talked to people about this, they always say, well, I can think of an exception, and I can too, but a lot of them go back some years. I mean, it was a long time since Kirk was elected senator, and he lost. It's, you know, Rauner won in a strongly Republican year against the unpopular Democratic incumbent, Pat Quinn, but then he lost handily this time. 10 years ago, there were more anomalies, as it were. There were Republicans had a chance to win legislatures in states like Oregon, but it's been 20 years since Republicans have won the House in Illinois or the Assembly in California. I mean, the amount of time parties are in power is longer. There are fewer states that are in play, and the average majorities within legislatures have grown larger in this decade. So, yeah, there's still a few anomalies, and it does seem like people look at the job of governor a little bit differently. Sometimes people do like to have a governor who is from the other party, who can act as a check on the legislature. A number of the governors who were elected this last fall, there were 20 new governors elected nationwide, which was quite a bit of turnover. A lot of them were more moderates. They were the new Democratic governors in Wisconsin and Michigan, for example, beat more progressive challengers in their primaries, and some of the more conservative people running on the Republican side lost. Kris Kobach in Kansas and Bill Schuette in Michigan. These were very ideological conservatives. And they lost, and the very progressive candidates lost for governor. Ben Jealous in Maryland, David Garcia in Arizona, Stacey Abrams in Georgia, and Andrew Gillum in Florida. So it seems like for governor, that's a job with a high enough profile that people are willing to vote for the man and not necessarily the party. But when it comes to legislatures, most people don't know who their legislator is. I've had this argument for years with legislators where they say, people in my district know me, they stop me in the grocery store. And that's true to some extent. But in general, people just vote very generically for their party. And so those offices have become much more nationalized. And like I say, a lot of people will not consider voting for Republican right now, or vice versa, depending on their leanings. They just are not splitting their tickets like they used to.
Talking with reporter Alan Greenblatt. He has written for Governing Magazine a new article titled All or Nothing, and it takes a look at the rise of one-party dominance across the country in state government, also in congressional districts. Alan, one of the most interesting things I thought in this article, and was sort of new to me, was that people actually choose their positions on issues like immigration or climate change, to be in lockstep with their party positions, meaning that parties are about identity, not policy. That was according to one expert that you talked to. Talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, you're on one team or the other. So, you know, you're staunch Republican and you know where your party is. So the party has changed. I mean, the Republican Party, if you look at polls, the number of Republicans who are skeptical about trade, for example, is much higher than it was 2 years ago before Donald Trump became president. He's obviously been critical of a lot of trade packages, and he has convinced people in his party to change their points of view. And we see this on a number of issues. There have been a lot of studies on this. For instance, on climate change, if you ask people, does human activity contribute to climate change, you'll see a big partisan gap between Republicans and Democrats. But if you ask, according to climate scientists, does human activity contribute to climate change, there's no partisan gap whatsoever. So in one case, you're asking people a knowledge question. Do you know that climate scientists claim that humans are causing climate change? There's no partisan gap. But if you say humans are causing it, people know their party is not, if they're Republicans, they know their party does not believe that. And the gap is actually widest among the most educated people. So people who know the most don't necessarily they come up with ways of rationalizing their sense of where their party is, that or why they're getting in line with where their party is. So we see this on issue after issue. Of course, there are some issues where people have very strong opinions and may not change. But in general, if you look at the averages, people do shift to be in line with where their party is.
And Alan, at the same time, I keep hearing about all of these people who say, I don't really belong to a party. I'm an independent, and I think for myself, and I have different views on things, and yet we're seeing this one-party dominance, depending upon where you're at in the country. It almost seems as though that doesn't jibe with what they're saying.
Right. I mean, there's the number of people who identify as independents is pretty high, and in states where people register by party, independents are growing fast, and people do not want to identify with the party. But in a way, this is part of what we're seeing. I mean, one reason that people will only vote one way or another, it's not that they love their own party so much, it's that they hate the other party. They think those people are crazy, and that cuts certainly both ways. So there are a lot of people who are saying, I you know, to heck with both of them, I'm an independent, but a political scientist has shown again and again, people who say they're independent vote essentially just as partisan a manner as people willing to identify with the party. So now you have a lot of people saying, I'm not happy with either party. I don't want to belong to either party, but I'm certainly not going to vote for that party. I'm not going to vote for those crazy Republicans or those crazy Democrats. So it does seem like on its face, a puzzler why we have more independents at the same time we have this partisan polarization, but it's all part of the same thing. People are unhappy. They may not want to say they belong to one party or the other, but they're certainly not going to vote for the other party.
So what role does redistricting play in this? Because, of course, we see in states, Illinois is one of these states where it's virtually all or nothing as well when it comes to defining the legislative boundaries of different districts. Can that actually flip a state around, a state maybe like in Illinois, if Republicans were able to draw the legislative map?
Yeah, the maps can make a big difference. I mean, some of this, this is a point of a debate for sure, that like I say, we have this kind of natural sorting where people are voting or voting in line with their area. More people are living in single party districts or single party counties. Counties, of course, are not redistricted, but the number of people who live in counties that are overwhelmingly Democratic or overwhelmingly Republican has gone up enormously over the last 40 years. A majority of people live in a county that is strongly Democratic or Republican now. So again, it's the big urban counties primarily that are voting Democratic and the rest that are voting Republican. And anyway, so even if you had a perfectly fair system in a lot of states, you know, voters in, I think, three states last year voted to create independent redistricting commissions, take it out of the hands of the partisan legislators with the idea they can make more fair. But there's only so many ways you can slice up these big cities into different districts. So basically redistricting exacerbates these tendencies that are there already for areas to vote one way or another. And certainly they can have a big effect. Up in Wisconsin, Democrats won more votes statewide for the state assembly there, but Republicans came away with I think it was 63-36 advantage, something like that. If you had a map that wasn't so heavily redistricted and tilted toward the GOP, it might be different. But the reality is a huge percentage of the Democrats live either in Madison or Milwaukee, so that's going to limit the number of districts that they can win anyway.
Well, this divide seems to lead to less compromising in government, or at least on its face it seems that way. Maybe the harsher tone that we're hearing in politics these days, is that all tied into this one-party dominance?
Yeah, I mean, certainly we're seeing it in Washington. We have divided government there, and, you know, for years there's been gridlock in Washington. It's quite different at the state level, though, because rather than the two parties being basically evenly matched as they are nationwide, within individual states, one party tends to dominate. There are a number of states where Democrats control everything, and conversely, there are more states where Republicans control everything. And so they don't need the other party's cooperation at the state level. You don't have the filibuster like you do in the U.S. Senate. So this polarization certainly happens. There's antagonism between the parties within legislatures quite often, but one party tends to, you know, rule the roost. And so you don't have gridlock in the states the way you do at the federal level.
So I have to ask before we wrap up, are the days of the moderate politician, the one that might cater to some, maybe a Democrat who caters to some Republicans and vice versa, are the days of the moderate politician over?
It looks that way pretty much. I mean, certainly there are some, but even in the past couple of weeks, we've seen legislators in New Jersey and California who were elected as Republicans switch to the Democratic Party. They're in the type of affluent suburbs that have become more Democratic, and whether they think their party has left them, as they say, or whether they just think they have a better chance of being reelected as Democrats, they switched. And, you know, 20 years ago, we saw that all over the South, where a region that had been Democratic became very Republican. So typically, you know, the incentives now are to be strongly with one party and against the other party. And there's no reward for being a moderate, compromising, because, you know, you're seen as a traitor. So, of course, there are a few, but that's who lost. I mean, it was, when you look at where the Democrats were able to win the districts that won them the House last year, it was the moderates who got wiped out. People did not want compromisers. In general, you know, the Republican Party has become very conservative. It's certainly in this past decade, there are very few moderates left. And on the Democratic side, they seem to be going as far left, certainly in the presidential field, as they can. And so there are very few moderates left. And even though a lot of people will say that they are centrists themselves or wish politicians would just get along, most parties, most districts are one way or the other. So whoever wins the primary, who's more likely to be, you know, very progressive or very conservative.
That's Alan Greenblatt. Alan, thanks for being with us today on Statewide.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a pleasure to talk to you.